Welcome to the Katie's Quilting Corner podcast. I'm a 20-something quilter sharing my personal journey through the spun hobby. Hear Notion and book reviews, free patterns, Quilt Guild experiences, corgi dog stories, and life updates. Come get addicted to quilting with me, Katie. This episode is dedicated to an interview that I conducted with Kimberly Einemo, and we talked about pre-cuts and her books and her rulers and her sewing space, and there are some really great tips in here, so I hope you enjoy it. Photos and links will be on my blog post with the show notes, and also a giveaway of one of her books and one of her rulers, so take a look at that, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Well, I'm here with Kimberly Einemo. It's Einemo, right?
Einemo. Okay. Einemo like Einstein.
Okay. And we're in her quilting studio. So thank you for letting me interview you finally.
Oh, thank you, Katie. I'm so excited that you're here.
Me too.
We've been talking about this for a long time.
I know. It's been since December, I think. We've been trying to get this together. So, and both of us have had disasters, so.
Yeah. Hopefully now everything is smooth sailing.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself and your family.
Where to start? I'm married 23 years to my best friend, Kent, and we have two boys, 17 and 13. So they keep me busy, and Kent right now is working up in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
So he commutes home every other weekend. So we've had a great time traveling the world and seeing the world because I'm a military wife.
Okay.
And Kent is retired military. He was in for 23 years. And we've been married for 23 years, but he was in before we got married. So we have moved 13 times in those 23 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I'm a pro at moving. I'm a pro at moving. But that's our family. And we have three cats and one dog. So three rescue cats and a spoiled little puppy dog.
And I met Divot earlier.
Yeah,
and
she's
Puppy.
Right over there. And Snickers is on my bed and Poppy's upstairs hiding.
Oh.
So she's the skittish one. But
I have the same with my dog, so one hides all the time. So when did you start quilting, and who got you into it?
In 1991, when we moved from Melbourne, Florida to Washington, D.C., or the Northern Virginia area for the first time, I had sewn all my life from the time I was 7 years old, making garments. But I'd never gotten into quilting until 1991. And I walked by from the metro on my way home, walking home from work. I walked by a quilt shop called Quilt and Stuff, which sadly is no longer there. But I walked by and I was like, what is this? I don't know how I missed it my whole life. You know, I had never been exposed to it. And I walked in and I immediately signed up for a 6-week class. And it was from a wonderful woman who taught all the basics. I mean, down to making your own templates, drafting your own, you know, drafting your own designs. She taught things that a lot of quilters don't spend time learning today, mm-hmm. but I'm really glad I learned. And before, even though I had a full-time job, before the end of that 6-week class, I was working at the shop as my second job.
Oh, wow.
Because I was like, hooked. I was like, where has this been all my life? So I was hooked from the moment I walked into that store and worked there. And it's kind of funny because we were pretty poor back then and not making a lot of money. And I can just remember that I really didn't have a lot of money to do extra classes.
Mm-hmm.
So a neighboring quilt shop was hosting Friday night mystery nights. And it was $60 to go. Now, in 1991, this was
a
huge amount of money,
yeah.
plus fabric. And I thought, there couldn't be anything better in the whole world than to spend a Friday night from 6 to midnight with a bunch of women sewing quilts, making something.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I've got to do this. So I convinced the shop owner to let me teach one at the shop at Quilt and Stuff. And that's how I got my start. Because I couldn't afford to go to the neighboring shop's class, so I started my own, and I just got hooked from there.
And how was it teaching your first class? Were you nervous?
Scared to death.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm sure I made tons of mistakes. You know, I'm sure. But, the ladies were really nice about it, and it wasn't long, though. I had used other published mystery patterns, and the students were required to buy them, and I just led them through the steps. But after about 4 or 5 times, I just had a real problem with teaching someone else's design. So mm-hmm. I thought, and I was a graphic designer by trade, and okay. I was doing that for a trade association in Alexandria. And so on my off hours, I would use CorelDRAW and come up with my own designs, and that's how I came up with designing my own quilts, because I felt more comfortable teaching my own patterns than, you know, using published patterns.
So when you were using Corel, that would just help you design the colors and the yes. shapes and everything.
And then
I had to figure out yardage.
And then I had to sit and figure out the math. Mm-hmm. And that was a real challenge. But I've always been pretty tenacious when it comes to challenges. So I was just not about to say quit on this. And I thought, well, I'm going to figure it out. And then about that time, EQ3 was in the shop, and I bargained with the owner to let me, you know, have the software if I would like get into it and then teach others.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So that's how I got into it, because again, it was pretty expensive up front.
Yeah.
And she gave me that first box of EQ3, and I have been a dedicated EQ user ever since.
Are you going to do any more EQ classes? Or?
Probably not, because I've kind of branched out into other things, but I still mm-hmm. use it exclusively for all my designing.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do it without it. I think it's easier to design a quilt with EQ than to try to do it without now.
On paper.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I don't have EQ, so I've been having to use paper and little stuff.
It's so easy. So. Now, I'd sit down with you and teach you how to use it.
Okay. We'll have to do that when I get
we'll
it for my birthday or something.
EQ7 is what I'm using now, and I just love it. So it makes it so easy.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite part of the quilting process?
Actually, whatever part I'm in at the moment, I really get into. And I tend to run in cycles. I'll tend to be in a cycle of when I'm designing for a book, I'll just be in design mode for several weeks, mm-hmm. maybe 6 weeks. And I won't even sit at the machine. And then I'll break from that and I'll get into selecting all the fabrics and putting the fabrics together for the quilts for a book. And then I'll start sewing and be into that mode for a while. I think, though, the fabric selection and the color selection would probably be my favorite part. I love that. I can get so inspired walking into a quilt shop and I'll see one fabric that just jumps off, you know, the bolt, or just screams at me from across the room, and I'll pick it up and I'll carry it around with me and I'll grab other fabrics to go with it. And I just love that because I can really get enthused. I've designed 1,000 more quilts by doing it than I've been able to make. It's really easy to get inspired by fabric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you have the pre-cuts that you're working with a lot.
And I love them.
So.
I so love working with pre-cuts. Jelly rolls and layer cakes are my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get a little piece of every fabric from a line, and it gives you a really scrappy look to a quilt, a really interesting look, without you having to do the work of combining all those fabrics.
Yeah, or matching colors.
Matching colors, because it's already done. If
yeah.
they're already in the roll, they're already matched. And so I really love that. And then I get to play in all those colors, and by the time I'm done with that quilt, I'm ready to move on to a completely different color
mm-hmm.
scheme. So I really get to test the waters of all different kinds and styles and genres of fabric.
Do you have a part of the quilting process that's your least favorite?
Basting.
Basting.
I hate that part. I really do. That's the tedious part
yeah.
for me. So that's not my most favorite part. And here Miss Snickers came to say hello. And you can see she looks like a Snickers bar.
Yes, yeah, she does.
Yes,
she looks like
my
parents'
it.
Cat, Mozart, the tortoiseshell.
Yeah, tortoiseshell cat. So she's here. She doesn't like the basting part either. But actually, my cats really help me in the studio. And I always say that my quilts are 80% cotton and 20% cat hair.
Mm-hmm. I have corgi hair all over my quilts,
hey,
too.
They add fiber content. It's what they can do.
It's all natural.
It's right. It's right.
I hated the basting process so much, I started to learn long-arming.
Because then you don't have
pins.
To.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
So that's my least favorite.
How do you keep track of all your projects?
That's a good question, and I am very organized. I'm actually a little too organized, but everything is either on chart form. I keep, you know, like spreadsheets, and I literally list my projects when I have a deadline, when they're due, because otherwise I become really overwhelmed, you know, trying to design for books and magazines. It's a lot. So Kitty's really helping here.
Snickers is enthralled with the microphone.
Yes, she is. If you hear purring, it's her. But so anyway, that's I really try to keep everything written down. I keep lists. I have this, you know, tables and charts where I have like, and I keep a calendar, and I really live by that calendar. Sometimes it makes me frustrated because I have so many commitments, I don't get to just quilt for fun. So I just try to enjoy whatever quilt I'm working on, even if it's for a deadline.
So, did quilting change for you when you started quilting?
It does, because when it becomes a business, which is what it has become for me, it is harder. I still love it, and it's worth it in the end. I love it when books are released, and or somebody will write and say that they really loved a pattern I did, or that, you know, they made it, and or they loved reading the book just because it was fun to read. That's the reward for me. And I love, you know, I love that part of it. But it is, it's, you know, it's some days if you don't feel like quilting, but you have a deadline and you have to make yourself get it done, you know, that's the hard part. It's discipline. And I do discipline myself to come in the studio every single day, sometimes very late nights, sometimes weekends, to meet deadlines. And sometimes I get frustrated with the actual deadlines, but then I think, no, this is all good. I could be behind a desk somewhere, you know, doing a job I really don't like. And so ultimately I just have a talk with self and say, you know, put on your big girl panties and get over it.
How many UFOs do you have in your
studio? I saw that on the list of questions. I'm like, okay, what do I really answer here? I would have to say there's probably between 25 and 30 UFOs lurking behind these closed doors and in boxes outside in the garage. Some things I started and I just realized getting into it, it just wasn't happening or it wasn't turning out. And I hate leaving UFOs, but I also don't have the luxury of finishing them if it's not for a purpose. I know that sounds kind of strange, but if I know it's really not going to amount to anything, I have either gifted it to someone else or donated it. Before I moved to Florida and before our last move overseas, I donated a lot of stuff to my guild as, you know, unfinished blocks and things to see if they could do something with for charity quilts. Only because, number one, we were overweight with our household shipment going overseas and I had to lighten the load. And number two, because I just needed to let go of some things.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to know when to cut and run. And it's okay. And this has been a really hard process for me to even come to grips with in my own mind. But sometimes you just need to say, this just isn't what I thought it would be, and I just need to let, you know, cut it and move on and say, it's okay that this didn't come to fruition, and just let it go. And I have thrown a few things away that really just, you know, just weren't going to make it, or I made so many mistakes in the trying to machine quilt it, or, you know, something that ripping it out wouldn't have saved it, and that's been really hard. I take deep breaths, deep cleansing breaths, and move on.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw Leah Day. She burned one of her quilts. She was so frustrated.
Really?
Did you? I don't know if you saw the video, but she was so frustrated with the process and stuff that had happened. She took the quilt outside and burned it.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her, because sometimes you need that freeing experience. You need the freedom to move on to your next thing and get that creativity back. Otherwise, it can be like, I think, a ball and chain.
Yeah.
You feel like, oh, I invested so much money. Oh, I invested so much time. And I got to make it right. And some quilts, no matter what you do to them, will never be right.
Yeah.
It's just the project, for whatever reason, it won't be right no matter how many times you rip it out. And that's when you need to give yourself permission to just cut and run. I like that burning idea.
Yeah.
I have a little chiminea out back. I could do that. Go put them in there
really
later.
Bad one.
Yeah.
What time of day do you find yourself most productive?
Well, I'll tell you when it's the least is before noon. Mm-hmm. I just can't get it really together before noon. So I spend that time answering emails, catching up, organizing, cleaning up, doing things like that. But my really productive time is, believe it or not, either late in the afternoon or anytime after 9. Mm-hmm. I get like a second wind about 8 or 9 o'clock, and I can be really creative up until about midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because when my boys were younger, that was the only time the house was quiet, And I just kind of, you know, that was when I could really work uninterrupted without little kids running around. Of course, they're older now, and they're still noisy, but I learned to tune them out. No, they're good kids. But I'm really creative at night. But I've always been a night owl. Mm-hmm. So I'm very creative at night. I get a lot of great ideas about 11:30 if I'm taking a hot shower before bed. You know, I just need to kind of erase the day or get the, you know, get unwound. And I'll get a lot of good ideas in the shower.
Let's see. Where do you stand on the pre-wash debate?
Ooh, that's a good one. Oh, I was used to be a diehard. It had to be pre-washed. Diehard. I mean, and before a fabric ever made its way to my stash, when it came in my front door, it went straight to the laundry room. And it was pre-washed. And then I would iron it and press with a magic sizing and put the sizing back in because I love the crispness of sizing. But then I started working with pre-cuts. And guess what? You can't wash a jelly roll. No. Ask me how I know. I've tried. That jelly roll was one of those things I had to. It came out of the wash as a ball of just muddled mess, and I had to just discard it. And I thought, I've got to get over this. Mm-hmm. Now, since then, I have never washed a pre-cut. And I don't wash any accompanying yardage that goes with it. I personally have never had a quilt run, but I also use those shout dye catchers when I wash my quilts just to make sure. Now, they'll come out kind of dingy looking, but I myself have never had a problem with using pre-cuts, even the batiks.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I've been okay, but I wouldn't think of washing them in hot water, and I wouldn't think of doing it without those dye catchers, and they really do seem to catch. Because they do come out pretty gray and yucky looking. But then everything's been fine.
That's so good. I've got my first batik jelly roll that I was looking at.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I need to do something washing
it. No, I think it's going to be okay. You know, I'm sure there's going to be an exception somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I myself have not had a problem, and I do a lot of using batiks. I love batiks. So,
and you do a lot of white background fabric,
too. I do. I very rarely use dark background fabric, so I've not had a problem. But again, cold water and those sheets.
Yeah.
Buy those sheets.
The shout color catchers. I always have to have a box.
Yeah, so. I do too. I just would not think of what, and I wouldn't, I don't like to mix unwashed fabrics with washed fabrics because then they really are going to get funky. Think if you keep them the same, you're not going to have the problems.
What was the last quilting class that you took?
Oh my goodness. Class. I haven't taken one in years, to be honest with you. I'm trying to think. I am signed up for a little wool felting club this month. That'll be my first one in a long time. But no, I just haven't had time. I just don't have time as much as I would love to. My schedule is just jam-packed. Mm-hmm. I'm a little overextended at this point, and learning to say, no, I can't. I always accommodate, so, and that's hard for me because I don't like to say no to anybody.
Even me.
No.
I felt bad asking for your time.
No, not at all. This is wonderful.
Tell us a little bit about how you became involved in publishing your own books and patterns.
Okay, well, when we were living over in Germany the first time in 2004, I had put together, well, to back up a little bit more, when we were traveling over there, everywhere we went, I would buy little bits of fabric. And fabric in Europe is very expensive, very expensive. It runs about 30 euros a meter, which would be $40-$45 a meter or a yard, which is, you know, 3 inches more than a yard. And so I would only buy little bits of it. And my husband would always say, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with it? And I'd say, someday I'll write a book. I ended up designing mystery quilts around the cities that we were visiting at the time, Paris and England, and I started thinking, gee, this could make a good book. And so I wanted to call it Quilted Souvenir, and I actually got online and looked at the different publishers for the needlecraft industry, such as CNT and Patrick Place and AQS, and looked at, they all have publishing guidelines, and they will tell you what they want to see from you when it comes to publishing. And so I literally typed up a manuscript, sent it off to AQS, kind of forgot about it because we were right in the middle of packing up to move back to the U.S., and I got a phone call from Barbara Smith. She was the editor, executive editor at the time, and she called me and she says, "We love it. We'd love to publish your book." I think they could hear me screaming in New York from Germany. I was so excited because, you know, I just didn't really think it was going to come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And that's how. And they published my first book, which was Quilted Travel Souvenir. And I love the people at American Quilters Society. They treat me like family. They are one big happy family. Mm-hmm. There. It was begun by Meredith Schrader, and she is, you know, her family basically all works there. And they just took me under their wing, and I just wouldn't even think of going with another publisher. And so I've published 3 books so far. My 4th book's coming out in September or October, and I already have a contract for a 5th book.
Oh, wow. That's so exciting.
I know. So I have no shortage of things to do.
Has your editor stayed the same over the years?
No, it went from Barbara to Andy Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And she's fabulous. I love her too. She makes me laugh. She has the driest sense of humor. And you just have to be flexible in this business because it is a business, and they have a lot of ideas about what they see. Now, they work very hard not to change the voice of my book. Mm-hmm. And not to edit the way I write. They really want my own writing style to shine through. But if they see something that needs improvement, they're not afraid to tell me. And sometimes it's a, you know, we never have any disagreements, but sometimes it's a sharing of ideas that goes back and forth, and no, I don't think this is going to work, or, you know, they'll be really honest and say, you know, you missed the mark on this one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's good because she has my best interests at heart. She wants the book to sell well, just like I want it to sell well. So I just stay open to what they have to say about it and their ideas. And sometimes it's clearly different than I went into something, as with the 4th book, the name got changed, you know, but it's okay. You know, I just roll with the punches. Mm-hmm.
And do they test your patterns, and they have like,
oh,
a group,
yeah,
over
oh
there?
Yeah, they do. And I have a friend who tests patterns for me too. I ask my friends to look at them and road test the designs before, mm-hmm, they even get to that point. And then I've been working with Linda Lasco. She is another editor there, and she does the nuts and bolts of the crossing all the T's and dotting the I's and making sure every little number's right. And she does the math, really works with the math. If they're, you know, if I've come up with a way to put a block together or cut a block, she'll test it to see if there is a more efficient way to get the same number of units.
Oh, wow.
And so we spend hours on the phone talking about, is this the best way to cut it? Is this the most efficient way? And they've been really, really great about letting me use my own rulers, mm-hmm, in the methods of how to do block construction. So I provide 2 ways, traditional method construction and then with my set of rulers in the book. So that's really, really a blessing too. It gives people a choice.
And I have all of your rulers, I think. All of them. Oh. I found a couple on sale, and then I bought the other ones in your class.
Oh, thank you.
And they're awesome. I love to use them.
Thank you.
How did that happen?
Really, it's a very funny story. Back when my first book came out, The Quilted Travel Souvenir, in 2005, I went to Quilt Market, which is the vendor trade show, mm-hmm, before Quilt Festival in Houston in 2005, and I was walking by the Easy Rights booth. And there was a woman standing there, and there was nobody in the booth at the time. And I just, in my kind of irreverent, flippant way, said to her, "You know, you all don't have a good flying geese ruler. Why don't you make one?" And she just said, "Oh, you're absolutely right. We don't have one. Would you design one for us?" And I didn't know it was the vice president of the company at the time. I didn't know who she was. And I said, "Well, okay. How hard can it be?" Yeah. Well, let me tell you, 16 months later, I thought, okay, I'm going to research every way to make flying geese that there are, because I love flying geese. That's probably my favorite unit in the world to make. But I wanted to research all the different ways that there was already rulers out there. There was traditional methods of, you know, the rectangle with the 2 squares, mm-hmm, on each side and drawing the line. And, you know, those always come out wonky, or you cut the points off. And so I researched what was out there, and I literally made notes about every method. What didn't I like? What did I like? what works, what didn't work. And I wanted to do it where I wanted to come up with a ruler that if you got home and you lose the packaging and 6 months later you can't find the directions on how to use the ruler, it doesn't matter. So everything you need to know is right on the ruler. And the next thing I wanted to do was use colored ink instead of just black. And I wanted to make it two-sided. I thought, there's got to be a way to have an acrylic two-sided ruler. So I have magenta, pink as my side A. And if you flip the acrylic ruler upside down, then the mint green is side B. And those words and letters face forward, and you can read them, and the magenta pink are upside down. So there really is a side A and side B to my rulers, and I really like that because it's different. Mm-hmm. And I was the first one to do a two-sided acrylic ruler in the market. I was really proud of that.
And it comes in very handy. I'm making your rainbow Lone Star right now from your book. And so you have a lot of leftover stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm having to cut the rest of my strip after I get. I'm doing a border now.
Oh, good.
So I'm cutting my squares and I'm cutting up the rest because I want to do, I think, some sort of star block just to use up the rest.
Don't you find that it's hard to use up a jelly roll? I mean, it just goes and goes and goes. It's like those strips multiply.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get to the end of a strip. To use up all the fabric. There's so much. There's 2.5 yards of fabric in a jelly roll. And so that's a lot of fabric to use up. So you'll be able to make a lot of leftovers.
Yeah, I'm going to put something on the back too. Because it's the Robert Kaufman roll. So I've got, it's 43 strips, not 40.
So you got more, yeah.
So I have, I was like, oh my gosh.
It's really hard to use them up. I saw the picture on your blog. And I can't wait to see it done. Isn't that a fun little thing to do?
It is. And that was, I had insomnia. If you listen to the last podcast, you'll hear. But I was up, I got up one night at 1 a.m. and started piecing it because I couldn't
sleep. That is so great.
So I think I'm going to call it like Insomnia Rainbow or something.
There you go. That's so awesome.
It was fun. What are some tips that you have for beginning quilters?
To take time to learn the basics. They really want to skip ahead and not learn about things like bias or, you know, triangles and why it matters. The more that they can talk to their friends, observe other quilters, read books, read blogs, get information. I think it's just they want to sit down and sew, you know, really difficult pieces in the beginning, and then they don't understand when it doesn't turn out and they get frustrated. So I think it's really important that they learn the basics or try to get as much information, and also not to set the bar so high for their first quilt, because again, they get frustrated when they don't see instant results and they're in too deep, and then they just give up. And that's the worst thing. I think the best thing a new quilter can do is start with something very easy. It could be just squares, could be a 9-patch, but then to finish it, to have a finished quilt, and then they get enthused about, oh, look, I made it, I'm done. The other thing I see a lot is they'll finish the tops, and then no one will either show them how to quilt it, or they get frustrated with the quilting, or it's just too overwhelming, and then they just stop and they don't finish it. Again, it's the finishing. And even if that means taking that top to a long arm, great. It's out the door, it's done. By the time it's at the long armers, consider it done.
Yeah.
And then they can have the reward of feeling productive and feeling like they did it. And then you increase the skill level every time you make something.
Are there some tools that you think
a really sharp rotary cutter?
Yeah.
I think that's essential. And I love the little ones, but I would recommend, I see a lot of new quilters with the little smaller rotary cutters, and they just don't quite cut it, or they've got a ruler that's just too small. You really need, if you're only going to have three things on a desert island, you need a good mat, you need a 6x24-inch ruler, and a really good rotary cutter, at least 45 millimeters or larger.
I use a 60.
Yeah, I do too.
It makes things so much easier.
It's like a hot knife through butter.
It is.
You know, especially when your blade is sharp. You know, and that's the other thing. It's just, I see these people working with little tiny rotary cutters that are dull and a ruler that's too hard to hold, and they're struggling, and I think it doesn't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
A nice big rotary cutter that feels good in your hand, you can do amazing things. So they just need some good tools. Oh, and the other thing is, a machine that works, is in good working condition. Yeah. How many people pull a machine out of their mother or grandmother's closet that hasn't been run in 25 years, and they sit down and it doesn't run right, the tension's off, there's burrs, there's the thread throw up on the bottom, mm-hmm. and they get really frustrated. Again, the frustration level gets so high that they say, oh, this isn't worth it, and they push it aside. So the best thing you can do, even if you have your grandmother's 25-year-old machine or the mm-hmm. machine that's been put away, take it to the dealership, take it to a place that will clean it, oil it, get it running right, and then when they get good even stitches and everything is working, then they get that feeling of, oh, I can do this, rather than the frustration they would feel with a machine that's just acting up.
And thread really matters.
Thread matters. I just did a...
I loved your post.
Are you a thread snob?
Yeah, I loved it because when I first started, I didn't know heads or tails about... I just thought, good, it's on sale. I'll use it.
Thread is everything. You know, thread is so important.
I've done a few short posts, but yours was great talking about...
Oh, thank you.
You know, it does hold your quilt together. You got me addicted to Aurifil thread.
Oh, yeah. And see, that's even an aha moment for me. Just in the past few months, I had used... a silk-covered cotton Mettler, which is a perfectly mm-hmm. great thread, but it's a 40 weight. I've used that for over a decade. Loved it. Tess over at Scrap and Sew kept saying, try the Aurifil. I'm like, no, I'm happy. I'm good, thanks. She'd say, try the Aurifil. You'll love it. Finally, she gave me a spool because I wasn't going to buy one. She gave me a spool. I thought, I better try it. I came home. I put it in. Oh my goodness. It makes such a huge difference. It's fine. It's super strong. It goes through your machine beautifully. Machines love it. And your perfect quarter inch seam gets even better because thread takes up space in your seam allowance. It really does. Even from a 40 weight to a 50 weight, it's amazing mm-hmm. how much better your seams will be. I couldn't believe it. So that was my aha moment. And you can see in that middle thread rack over there, all those lovely Aurifil threads I have since purchased.
Yeah, I'll post a picture. She's got just about every color I think over there. So, yeah, I love it. You when I took your Lone Star class, that's when you started talking about it. And I thought, well, I'll give it a shot.
I know.
Because I was using Guterman, which was really thick. And I thought, this probably is bulking my seam up. And I never thought about it before. And now I use it for binding, too. It just goes right in.
It does.
You can't even see it.
Yep. So, there I am. 50 away. I'm sitting here with a thread on my, with a quilt on my ironing board that I'm binding, and I'm using Aurifil thread because it's so perfect.
Yeah. My mom was like, I posted about it, and she was like, you need to tell me what is going on. She's never heard such a fuss about thread before.
So, you need to be a thread snob.
Yes. Yes, I'll have to tell her about it. How do you store your quilts?
Oh, right now it's always changed with wherever we've lived, but right now, and I'll show you later and you can take pictures, I have two long closets, and I either lay them or fold them up or I hang them mm-hmm. on hangers, but I always keep them behind closed doors. Never out where they can be. I mean, I do have some hanging on the walls or some that are used, mm-hmm. but the quilts and the books that I need to have for trunk shows are always stored in a nice dry area that is hidden from light because mm-hmm. I don't want them to get sun damage. So, and I do rotate them and refold them every so often. Heck, every time we move, they get refolded. But I do hang them on hangers and, mm-hmm. and just you change them around a bit.
Now, did you wash yours after they were finished?
Some, but and sometimes after they've been out on trunk shows or traveling, they start to look a little dingy and I will mm-hmm. wash them then. There are some from the newest book that haven't been washed yet. So
you send them out for photographing and they're ready to go.
They're ready to go, yep.
What sewing machine do you work with the most often?
Right now, I have a Pfaff Creative Sensation that I just bought about a month and a half ago. I traded in my Creative Vision. I love it. It is a wonderful machine. I also have in that cabinet over there a Pfaff 2170, which was the top end a couple versions back. It's a workhorse. I really like that. But I've sewn with so many. I love the Bernina 730. I love the Janome Memory Craft. Mm-hmm. Those are good machines also. I haven't had the chance to sew on a Baby Lock, but people really like them. But I really love Bernina. I do love my Sensation to death. But you know what? The different machines excel at different things. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think there's one truly perfect machine out there, because like when I had the Bernina 730, I thought it had the most perfect quarter inch stitch that ever was. So just different machines do different things really, really well.
So does your new one do embroidery too?
It does.
Do you do embroidery?
I do. I love to embroider. I don't have much time for it anymore, but mm-hmm. I really do love it. And I love the software end of it. Mm-hmm. I love all the digitizing and the customizing you can do with your designs. And I think it's great for making labels and
yeah,
which is really nice.
Yeah, it makes them much faster.
It does.
Stay on.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. What? We already talked about threads. Do you have a favorite quilt of your own that you love?
I do, and I'll show you. It is one of the first quilts I ever made. It was in 1992. It is a Christmas quilt. What's so funny about this was I made this Christmas quilt. It was every stitch by hand, every stitch. It's hand-pieced, hand-quilted. I think there's 900 and some squares in it. It's a trip around the world. Every square, every 2-inch square, was cut with a little cardboard template.
Oh, wow.
This is before I was into doing it by machine. And I worked so hard on this quilt. Now, if you looked at it, you'd say, you know, it has like toe picker stitches for the quilting because they're so big. But, you know, this was going to be my family heirloom. And at the time, I literally thought like I had invented the idea of Christmas quilts. Nobody else would have thought to make a Christmas quilt. Oh, wow. Well, I was in for a big awakening on that.
Can you describe your quilting space and what you love about it?
With all the different places we've lived, I've had some quilt studios I liked better than others. When we move, I just have to take over a space and make it my own and make do with what we have available. Some of them have been better than others. Where I'm at right now, it was a part of an in-law suite that I took over, so it's part kitchen. I'm not crazy about the cupboard space. If I had it to do over, I'd rip all this out and put in nice big, you know, floor-to-ceiling cupboards with doors on them. I do like the fridge in here, though. That's kind of handy. And I have a really nice cutting space that we got those cupboards. They're waist high. We got them from the Goodwill in Germany, or the Red Cross over there. It's like a Goodwill. And we've brought those back, and I really like them because of the perfect height for cutting for me. I like that. What I don't like in here and what we still need to improve is the lighting. Mm-hmm. At night, there's not enough light. I've got some hot lights scattered around the room. What I really need is really bright lights over the cutting area because it's just too dark in here at night. So that needs to be improved. But you know, you just take it a little bit at a time. We've only been here less than a year. We've still got work to do. But it's really essential that I have my machine in a cabinet. I like the flat sewing bed of working in a cabinet. Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really helpful. And it's close to my computer, so I can just spin around. And if I need to hook up the machine to the computer for embroidery or for the software, I can do that. And I also have my ironing board to the right of my machine, so I can just rotate, pivot in the chair. It makes me, you know, more efficient. But I do make myself get up and walk around because you can sit too long.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I make myself get up and walk. But the lighting would be the biggest thing that I'd want to improve because you really need good lighting. My friend Carolyn Archer she calls her studio, now she has long arm too, but her husband installed all this custom lighting She calls it the surface of the sun. And I just think, okay, I need the surface of the sun in here, nice and light and bright.
I have one little window in my room and I have the same thing. I've got light scattered everywhere.
But it's still not enough sometimes, especially at night.
Yeah, I have to quit because you get tired.
You get tired, your eyes can't see.
Yeah, and then you start cutting weird or going not straight, and you're like, okay, that's
exactly.
It.
Even with the hot lights, there's still shadows, mm-hmm. you know, in the room itself. So I really need to work on the lighting situation.
What fabric designers do you find yourself going back to?
Well, I love Robert Kaufman. a lot. That's not a designer, that's a manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And I love Moda. With Moda, for some reason I keep going back to Sandra Gervais. Is it Gervais? And Kate Spain. It seems like everything that they do, I love their stuff. It's bright, cheery. I've ended up working with some of the Three Sisters. I also like the, Camille Roskelly. She does the ruby and other things. I like her style a lot. Anna Marie Horner. And I like Riley Blake. Again, that's a manufacturer, and I don't know the designers. But I really don't pigeonhole myself into one area. I like to try new and different things all the time. And I also want to design quilts that are going to appeal to a wide variety of other people, other quilters. So I'm always working, you know, to try to do different things. But typically, I tend to gravitate towards anything light and bright. I don't typically do Jo Morton type things. I'm just not a reproduction. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite. Dusty colors. I like light, clear, bright, saturated colors. And I've never met a batik I didn't like. there's just not one out there. I love batiks, all batiks.
Are you doing the block of the month that the guild's doing with batiks?
I'm not either. They're so glorious.
I don't have time, but
I don't either, but they're glorious.
Every month I love coming in to see all of, I took a picture last night.
Did you post it? Because I saw one on Facebook.
Yeah, I did that. And I was like, gosh.
They're so beautiful. Yeah, all the batiks. Never met a batik I didn't like.
Do you have any patterns or colors that you really, really like?
My favorite color in the world is periwinkle. It really is. I love periwinkle. I've even taught my boys how to spot periwinkle from 20 paces. Should they marry quilters someday, this girl is going to be so happy. I love periwinkle, but as far as colors, I like to try new things. As I was telling you before we started, I just made a quilt recently for the next book, Book 4, with a black background, and that was really out of my box. It was something I've just not done before, but I did use bright, solid colors with that black to offset. But I don't know that I would typically go make a black background quilt again anytime soon. I think they're beautiful. First of all, they're hard to see when you're sewing. The black thread just blends in, and heaven forbid you have to rip anything, because then I'm pulling out the magnifiers. And it's really hard to rip on black fabric.
And you had another quilt in Jelly Roll Magic that had a brown background.
Right.
And I hadn't seen many of those in your books either.
No, I know.
It looks beautiful, though.
And they are beautiful. There is a place for those, you know, and you want to try different things. Mm-hmm. So I'm always pushing myself to try new and different things.
Do you ever get quilter's block?
All the time. And then there's other times when I can't get the designs down in EQ fast enough. There are times when I need to design something. Someone's asked me to design something, and it's just not there. Or I'll sit and play in EQ for a couple hours, and by the end of the day, not come up with anything good. So yes, I do. And what I find really helps with quilter's block, when I need to come up with something new and different, is to either look through some quilt magazines, browse other quilters' blogs, just open myself up to new ideas. Sometimes it's even, and I know it sounds corny, take a walk and listen to some music. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you just need to get away and not beat yourself up, because the more you say, I gotta do this, like, the more you're not gonna be able to. So sometimes I just need to walk away until the feeling strikes. You know, and then go try it again. Or sometimes playing in fabric or walking through a quilt shop, just something will catch my eye and I'll say, ooh, that has possibilities. So
yeah, lately, if I get to where I just don't feel like doing anything, I clean and I'll find weird stuff that I didn't even know was in my room.
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it. Yeah.
Because you discover things that you put away and you forgot about.
Absolutely. So.
Or at least I do in my space.
You know, and something I do, and you didn't ask the question, but every time I've worked on a project, when that project is done, I clean. I clean up my room. It's my way of just getting ready for the next one. I can't go from clutter and believe me, the studio does get messy. You know, I have stuff on the floor and you know, scraps and strings and everything. It's not like it's always looking nice. Mm-hmm. But after each project, I will stop, sweep the floor, put away the scraps, the leftovers, decide where they're going to go. You know, if I typically have fabric yardage left over that's less than a quarter yard, it goes in my scrap bins. Mm-hmm. And yardage that I have bigger pieces left, it goes back in my stash. So, and I'll have to take you on a tour of the stash. You haven't even seen that.
No. Do you do scrap quilting?
A little bit, and you'll see more of that in book 5.
Oh, fun.
You'll see more of that coming up. So again, that's me jumping out of my comfort zone and pushing myself to do more things that I haven't done up to now. Because I always need to keep learning, keep stretching myself. I never want to get stale.
I love scrap quilting, so that's exciting. Yeah, that you're going to be doing
it. You're going to see more of that.
You're a quilt show judge.
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about what that's like?
Yeah, it's an awesome responsibility, and it's really fun. You know, I can't believe that the first time I was ever asked to do it, I was like, really? Seriously? You know, somebody's going to like pay me to walk around and give my opinion about quilts. But it's an awesome responsibility because every single quilt was put out there by a quilter who is putting her quilt, her story, her feelings in your hands. So I take that really seriously, even though I'm kind of a lighthearted, you know, fun-loving girl. Take that responsibility of being a judge very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I will take the time to look at each quilt, learn as much as I can. I'm one of the judges that will ask to be read the description of each quilt. Some judges I know don't. They don't take the time to read the write-up, or they don't ask for the scribes to read it. I want to know, what was that, you know, what was behind it? What was the quilt maker thinking? Where was her heart? Sometimes there's not a story per se, but in most cases, there was a story behind that quilt. So I want to get up close and feel the love. And I'll say that even when I'm judging. You know, am I feeling the love with this? And you can always feel something. Every quilt was made for a purpose, whether it was utilitarian, whether it was to commemorate an event, to tell a story, to work through grief. You know, there's something about it. Or some quilts just needed to be made because the quilt maker just had to express herself, his or herself. So I will never say anything disparaging. I will find good points that I would ask the scribes to write down, what they did really, really well, and then find at least one thing that maybe they could improve. And I always word it in such a way that I would hope that it would never discourage anybody from entering again, because I know, and I've heard so many times, quilters will say, well, I entered a quilt once and they just hated it, or they, you know, tore me down, and I'll never do that again. I hear that all the time. I never, ever want that to be when they read a comment from me, because I want them to keep trying and keep entering. You know, they went to a great deal of trouble to get mm-hmm. that quilt there. You know, and here's something. Here's the biggest thing anybody can do if they're entering a quilt into a show. Before it gets packed up, it needs to be lint rollered. Cannot tell you how many times a quilt will be hanging up and there's little pokies or threads or hair or something on the surface of a quilt that detracts, when all it would have taken was a brush of a lint roller over it before they packed it up. And that, you know, that's something that's an easy fix. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest tip for anyone entering a quilt in the show. Just lint roller it real good front and back.
And you show some of your own quilts.
Yes, I do.
You got one this year. I saw it.
I do.
It's gorgeous. Have you gotten any comments on it yet?
Yeah, that they really liked it. And I just sent Plumeria Stars to Road to California. I think I entered it in the category that had the most number of quilts. It was like traditional bed size. Mm-hmm. So, but it got good reviews. And you know, it's fun for me to put it out there and hear what they have to say too.
So. And Bridget does all of your quilting.
Birgit Schuller?
Birgit, yes.
Yeah, she does. She does a lot of it. Carolyn Archer in Ohio also has done mm-hmm. some for me. Birgit does a lot for me. She's over in Germany. People always say to me, you send your quilts to Germany? Yeah, I do.
She does amazing work. I've seen it. And you told me she does it all freehand.
She does it freehand. She does it in her attic. She has an A-frame house on A-frame roof on her house, and she has her long arm set up in the attic, She can barely move around, and yet she makes these award-winning quilts. So when people say they don't have enough room to quilt, I'm like, you haven't seen Birgit's studio yet. It's an attic. She does amazing things. She is winning awards everywhere for her quilting.
And so. she'll do commissions for other people,
too. Oh, yeah, too. She will. Absolutely. Her website is Creative Bits. And if you Google her, if you just Google Birgit, B-I-R-G-I-T, and Creative Bits, it will come right up. She does amazing things.
She was here last year, I think, to teach long arm classes.
Yeah, she was over in Orlando.
And I didn't get to do any of that stuff, but I thought that sounded like a lot of fun. I hope she comes back.
She is amazing. She's on a whole different playing field. But we have a lot of fun Skyping each other and talking and you know, getting ideas. And we really work well collaborating together. When she was here, I was working on Plumeria Stars. And literally, I have plumeria trees out there, and they were blooming. And I said, I think it would be really neat to put plumeria blossoms on the quilt. And she went out and sketched the blossoms and went home and ended up quilting it. So that was a really neat thing. It's very special.
So when you send her a top, do you give her, I mean, obviously you gave some suggestions with that one, with what you would like.
Sometimes, or I'll say, ooh, I think this one's screaming out for feathers. Because she does feathers better than anybody I know. But sometimes she'll come back and she'll say, no, I don't think it needs feathers, or I think it needs something more geometric. So I'm always open to her suggestions. You know, we just kind of go back and forth, and really, if she thinks something else is going to work, I've never seen anything that she's done that wasn't spectacular. So I trust her judgment. The funny thing is, though, she'll use common household items all the time. Like the quilt I just showed you, the wild sampler, she used dinner plates. Just, she said she went to her cupboard, pulled out a plate that happened to be the right size, laid it down on the quilt, and quilted around it to create circles that connected, and then quilted inside the circles. I thought, brilliant. So she uses like common everyday items, you know, to get ideas from, which I just think is fantastic. She's on a whole different level.
The quilting part, you know, it's hard enough to learn how to piece and cut and design correctly, but then the quilting, it can be really overwhelming.
People ask me why I don't quilt my quilts. Actually, I'm a decent quilter. I'm a decent machine quilter, and even hand quilting I can do. I just don't have the time for it. But when I've got so many quilts to create in a year, and I'm literally making anywhere from 25 to 30 quilts in a year, by the time I get the tops done, I'm lucky to get them out the door to Birgit or Carolyn so that I'm on to the next top. I'm on to the next thing. And sometimes I will machine quilt the smaller ones myself, but typically for the books, they tend to be larger, and I just send them out because I am not on that level. I know what I do really well. I'm a really good designer, and I'm a good piecer, and I can do that well. So since I need to keep moving along to meet deadlines, it's just easier to send those out and let the masters do it.
Yeah, and that's okay to say, you know,
it is.
This is not my forte, but I love this part of quilting.
Right. And so. I love it when I'm in a class and I'll say something like that and I'll see the light bulb go on in someone's head and they're like, yeah, it really is okay if I don't quilt it myself. It doesn't mean it's not my quilt.
Yeah.
Like, of course it doesn't. You know, you just do what you love, send it out the door, and know that you're keeping a person who's running a small business from her home, you're helping her keep her business going. So it's really okay. And then they get to do the thing that they love to do, which is a lot of people love to make the tops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they get mired down with, oh, I need to quilt it. And no, you don't.
Yeah, or they have a stack of tops that need to be quilted and never get finished. Yeah, and that's something that I'm still working through.
Yeah.
The fact that I don't have to quilt everything that I make. So I have one of your quilts that I think when I finish it, it'll be my first one that I send out.
Yay! So that's so great.
It's hard to let that go.
It is.
It's like giving away your baby or
it
something.
It is. Or feeling like that you didn't finish it.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm failing somehow. Not failing, but that you didn't see it through to completion. And that's not it at all. Let these gals that do this and love it and are great at it make your top even sing even prettier.
Yeah.
Because they can do it in a way that maybe you can't. And it's okay. Then you're on to the next thing.
Okay. So moving on to your book stuff.
Yes.
Your new book, Jelly Roll Magic, was released, I guess, what, 4 months, 5 months ago now?
Yeah, in September.
Yeah. What are some of the differences between this book and your first Jelly Roll book?
When I started designing for the first Jelly Roll book, which was Jelly Roll Quilts and More, it was a fluke. I had proposed another book to AQS, and they said, "Oh, we love that idea, but jelly rolls are hot. We need a jelly roll book in our repertoire. Would you do one for us?" And I said, "Sure." And I had never made anything with a jelly roll before, so I had to teach myself what can you do with these things. And what I didn't like about jelly rolls at the time when they first came out in 2006 and 2007 were, at the very beginning, you saw a lot of rail fences, mm-hmm. and a lot of log cabins and a lot of, you know, they just looked like clunky jelly roll blocks, you know, just. And I thought, ooh, I like the idea of having the strips already cut, but I want to make quilts that don't look like they come from mm-hmm. jelly rolls. I want them planned, scrappy, but I want, you know, really amazing blocks. So I designed all the ones for Jelly Roll Quilts and More, and there are some really easy basic quilts in there, and there's some more difficult ones. But once I got into them, I couldn't stop. I couldn't turn it off. And I kept designing more and more. And then Jelly Roll Quilt Magic just sort of evolved from that. And about that time, it was like, well, I've done every rectangle, every square, every half square triangle, even flying geese. What else can you do? And that's when I got into diamonds. Wow, that's a revelation. You can make wonderful diamond quilts from jelly roll strips, and you can strip piece them. And I just thought, this is a revelation. So I kept going, new and different designs. And what's even funnier is, by the time I had done the manuscript for this, and we had planned for a certain number of pages in it, by the time I sent the manuscript to the publisher, I was about 50 pages over the manuscript. She's like, "You've got way too much information."
Oh, wow.
And at first, when we first started the editing process, we were hacking at it. And I said, "Oh, we can't get rid of that. It's so good." Or, "We can't get rid of this chapter. It's so good." And finally, I went back and I said, "You know, you're cutting about 50 pages from this manuscript. Let's just roll it over into book number 4. And they said, "That's a great idea." So we literally lifted one whole section from what should have been in Jelly Roll Quilt Magic, and that's what you'll see in book number 4, which will be out later this year. So that was the basis just to finish that. Now, this will be the end of my trilogy on jelly rolls. And I'm branching off into something a little bit different for book 5. But you may see them still pop up here and there because they're so wonderful. How can you not love them?
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people buy them. And I call them jelly roll virgins because they have them and they keep them in their studio, but they've never untied the bow.
It's scary when
it
you
is.
Untie.
And because the whole thing kind of goes poof and they blow up. And once you've opened them, you will never roll them back up again.
No.
So you just need to take deep breaths and get past it and dive right in because they really are so much fun. So that's kind of, I think I answered your question somewhere in there.
Yeah, but, somewhere.
But anyway, the quilts in Jelly Roll Quilt Magic are just a lot different. There's just a lot of completely different ideas. I even have like a Jelly Roll Quilt the Seasons. So I have 4 quilts for the different seasons. I really did the whole Dazzling Diamonds thing. I focused on rainbow jelly rolls mm-hmm. because that was something I was hearing a lot after the second book. People said, "Oh, these rainbow jelly rolls are so great, but what do you do with them?" Again, it was thinking a little bit outside the box. What do you do with these rainbow ones? And that's when I came up with kind of the quilt by numbers for the little rainbow checkerboard star or the rainbow geese, is trying to literally number your jelly rolls 1 through 40. And, you know, kind of filling in the numbers, 1 through 40, paint by numbers sort mm-hmm. of thing. So, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I tried to hit on some different areas to fill in the gaps.
It's a lot to keep track of. I've got my rainbow jelly roll that I'm cutting up right now.
It is a little bit hard. You have to, you know, either, I found now, and I should have put this in the book, but this was sort of an afterthought. You know those drying racks for your clothes?
Yeah.
Those are really good for hanging your strips on and, you know, labeling like what 1 through 10 can mm-hmm. be on one row and, you know, 10 through 20 can be on another little rack. And so you can kind of keep track of them that way. So that's Just another neat little tip.
And I love your lint roller tip.
Yeah, that was from necessity. The tip is before you untie your jelly roll, you use one of those lint rollers with the sticky tape, and you roll it back and forth a bunch over the top and bottom of your lint roller, of your jelly roll with your lint roller. And if you have to use several pieces of that sticky tape, you do. But it does cut down on the lint a lot, about 80%. So.
Yeah, and yeah. I passed that tip along to someone else. That was her complaint. She's like, when you unroll it, there's fuzz everywhere. I'm like, here, I learned.
Yeah, you just lint roll it first. You'll still get some fuzz, but it's not as bad.
And what do you do with the pinked edges? I know that trips up some people, too.
It does. It does. Now, and you'll notice different manufacturers have different size pinked edges. The Robert Kaufman tends to be a little bit wider pinked edges. The Moda is the smallest. I always measure from the point, and not the inside divot. The inside, that's a little bit too short. Mm-hmm. So measure from the outside points. If you then assemble a four patch or something and it ends up being too large, you can always trim off the pinked edges once you get it sewn into your unit. But I like to just start by measuring, or using, if you're using one of those quarter inch feet with the guides, have the pinked edge, you know, just touching the guide. You might see a little slivers of daylight where the inside of the pinked edge is not smashed up against that guide, but it's better way to measure.
And have manufacturers gotten better with being the proper size?
Much, much. There were some manufacturers out there in the first few years that weren't doing it well, and you still need to be careful with some of them. Some of the batiks were a little off, but I think they're much, much better now. I don't find there's much discrepancy at all because people complained. Mm-hmm. People really did complain. And in the beginning, some of the batik strips were as much as a quarter inch off. You know, either too short or too wide. They were just not even.
So. You were at Houston for the fall quilt market. Mm-hmm. Did you come back with any new pre-cuts?
Actually, I didn't come back with much. At market, there's nothing really to buy, but I did put in, like, I'll sit with the manufacturers and look at their futures and write out what I'd like to use, and then they will send it to me. So that's really nice. And I do, I'll show you in my cupboards over there, I have quite a stash of pre-cuts waiting to be used. I have some more coming from Robert Kaufman here in a couple weeks. People always say to me, oh, you get free fabric. Well, it's a double-edged sword. With free fabric comes big responsibility because the manufacturers aren't just giving out free fabric for nothing. When they give me fabric, I have to get it published. So there is a responsibility there to use whatever they send to make sure it shows up somewhere. You know, it's not like they're just giving it to me because I'm a nice person. You know, they want to see their fabrics used. So it's really fun. It's a real win-win situation. You know, I do get to see the new stuff ahead and the futures lines ahead of, you know, what you or regular customers see. Because by the time I get it, the new, about 6 months before you would see it in a shop, gives me time to make a quilt to get it to where it needs to go. So it can be pretty current by the time it gets published. Because what people don't realize is even for magazines, they plan a year ahead. Mm-hmm. I've got a quilt going into American Patchwork. It's going to go into the October issue that I'm already doing right now. So, you know, that we work way far in advance so that by the time these quilts show up, they're not already old. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that you have to, you know, be aware of the time frame. So you don't want to, you know, pick out too much stuff because then if you don't use it, it's old and can't be used. So, sorry, we got Snickers here.
One of the other quilting podcasters, she calls her cats the helper cats.
Yeah.
They help do all sorts of quilting stuff.
Snickers will sit right there next to me in that chair when I'm working, and she'll sit and, or she'll lay right there and keep me company. I call her my quality assurance manager.
I think she's in one of the books, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. I think all the cats are.
You're famous. Can you describe your design process for your quilts?
Yeah, it'll start with playing an EQ. I'll get an idea, and I'll. Another thing I like to do is I'll start with a word. It could be anvils, you know, and I'll go out and I'll research what are traditional blocks named anvils, And I'll go and look in Barbara Brackman's Blockbase, which is a software component to EQ. And you can type in keywords, or Paris, or log cabin, or, you know, lake. And it will pull every block associated with those words. This is a good way when I've got Quilter's Block too, mm-hmm. is to go ahead and do it that way. So I will pick a word and try to find as many blocks as I can, and then from there see how I can combine them in unusual ways. And so I'll try to do that. Or I will see a fabric line, or have a fabric line that's got flowers in it, or geometric shapes. And sometimes that, just using the fabric, gives me ideas of, ooh, that would be really cool with a bunch of, you know, circle shapes, or flangies, or a log cabin design, or, oh, that would look really pretty as a pineapple. So I just try to, and I think something that's kind of a signature look for me is combining two or more blocks to get a secondary design. I'm always playing with the illusion of fabric placement, because blocks that, simple blocks can look entirely different depending on where you put the lights, mediums, and darks. So if you put two basic blocks next to each other but change the fabric placement around, you can get some pretty cool secondary designs. And I really love to do that. And I'm really excited when I get a design and then the secondary design emerges. And I get really excited about that.
Do you ever show your family and get all excited? And...
I do. My husband's really supportive. He really, really gets excited. My parents, I don't think they quite understand. My mom's not a sewer, so she doesn't understand this. And she'll say, she keeps me humble. Mm-hmm. She'll say, you mean people come to, like, take classes from you? I'm like, yeah, Mom. People come to listen to your lectures? Yeah, they do. I don't think she gets it. But I think they're proud of me. I think my dad is really proud of me. He always wanted me to be a mathematician. He always thought I should be an engineer. And when I didn't, I think he was disappointed for a while. But then when I designed the rulers and have been doing this, I think he's like, wow, in a way, she's kind of an engineer. So I'm like a fabric engineer. I don't know.
Yeah. Quilting uses way more math than I ever imagined.
It does. I mean, and it uses geometry. And mm-hmm. I can remember being in high school thinking, when would you ever use this mm-hmm. in real life? And how did I end up doing the thing that I used to say, I'll never use this in real life?
When your next book is coming out?
This fall,
and then you have another one coming out next year?
Yeah, yes. Actually, it may come out, believe it or not, in 2014. Maybe at the end of 2013, we'll see. But I've already signed a contract for it and have started the design process. No quilts made for that one yet, and I'm still wrapping up the one that will be out this year, book number 4. So, and I'll be announcing the name of that on my blog very soon.
Okay.
And the cover, when the cover is officially out, then I'll have that out too. But that all should be out September, October time frame, somewhere in there. So I'm really excited about that. And that will finish up the trilogy.
The
Jelly Roll trilogy. But that doesn't mean I won't ever do anything with them anymore. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to move on to something a little bit different.
Was there a pre-cut that you worked with that you found difficult to, like, add in there?
Yeah, the turnovers, little triangle turnovers. They're 6.5-inch half-square triangles. They're really neat, but they are kind of tricky to work with. And a little bit limiting, and I think that's partly why they didn't do real well. Same with the honey buns, the 1.5-inch strips. Now, you still see a few of those around, but they didn't take off like the 2.5-inch strips. And personally, my all-time favorite pre-cut are the layer cakes. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. Because I love jelly rolls, but layer cakes is actually the same inch per inch as a jelly roll. If you were to cut a 10-inch square into 4 2.5-inch strips, you would get the, and laid them end to end, you would get the same thing as one strip in a jelly roll. And so this way, I can cut a layer cake in half and have 2 jelly roll strips and 2 charm squares. And like you said, it's hard to use up the strips in your jelly roll. Mm-hmm. Well, if you were using a 22-inch strip or 20-inch strip, it's easier to use that amount up, but then you still have 2 charm squares left. So I just think a layer cake's a little more versatile, but I love them both, you know.
And you do a little bit of appliqué in your books.
I do.
Which I find fun. I've got some charm packs saved up.
Yeah, to do your appliqué. It's fun. And they're just easy, basic, you know, machine appliqué. Mm-hmm. Because some people say, oh, I could never do appliqué. Well, you really can. And that opens up a whole new world of what you can do with pre-cuts. And so I've made the shapes like arc shapes, mm-hmm. you know, or half moon shapes, or even just circles or hearts. Really easy things, but you can get really stunning results. And a lot of people don't even think in their mind, you know, jelly rolls or charm squares and appliqué. And yeah, they can go hand in hand.
It's I really like the basic origins quilt in your last book.
Oh,
with all the circle appliqué.
I love that one.
And I've never used a twin needle before, but
I need to do a
twin needle now.
Yeah, what I did was I thought, what would happen if I put a twin needle in? It was a 4.0 needle, double needle, and some decorative thread, and I started playing with some of the basic stitches on the machine. And by those, I mean like utilitarian stitches, mm-hmm. smocking, zigzag, hem, blind hem stitch. You can get the most stunning looking decorative stitches from a twin needle and basic utilitarian stitches on your machine, because not everyone has the computerized machines with all the, you know, the little dogs and the planes and, you know, flowers, but they do. A lot of people have machines that do have smocking stitches or, you know, just basic zigzag. With a double needle, it just opens up a whole new world, and it's a great way to finish off raw edge applique, and it's real pretty.
It is. I like the combination. So every time I go and test a shop and I see it, well, I'm like, I need to do that.
It's a fun thing to do. And I love that line. That whole Origins line was really fun. And that was way out of my box, too. But that is a favorite. This spoke to me from the minute I saw it. That the greens and browns and yellows. So pretty. So pretty.
So when someone goes to buy a pre-cut, what's your recommendation with other things?
Oh, that's a great question. I have found that if you see a pre-cut that you like, if you see a layer cake or a jelly roll that you just love, but you don't know what you're going to do with it, you don't have an idea, typically stores will carry some accompanying yardage that matches. Here's the thing. If you buy the pre-cut and 6 weeks later you're ready to work with it and you go back, that yardage is gone. Mm-hmm. So here's what you do. If you see something that has a pre-cut and the yardage, but you don't know what you're going to make, buy 1.5 yards of a background fabric, 1.5 yards of an inner border, or it could be 1 yard, but I like to do this 1.5 yard rule. 1.5 yards background fabric, 1.5 yards for an inner border and a binding, and 1.5 yards for an outer border. So if you have those three things and a jelly roll or a layer cake, you're pretty good to go as far as making just about anything. You'll have enough yardage to do just about any quilt. So that's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Because I have a stack of jelly rolls on my dresser, and now I've got to go back and start matching stuff because I didn't do that.
I know. That's okay. You probably will have no problem.
Yeah.
You'll have no problem. But sometimes the dye lots and the background of some of these jelly roll strips are a little bit weird, and you can't find like the perfect cream to go with it, you know, because it's just a little too yellow or it's a little too blue or something. So if you take it, even if you now. If you don't know what you're going to make, but you think, oh, I really like this one, I'm in the mood to play with this, just go to the store, find a background fabric, and you're going to probably want that contrasting fabric and an outer border. So, and you can find a pattern that will go with it.
Well, that's good. Those are all the questions that I have. Do you have anything you want to add?
Oh, no, just that I would encourage anybody who's never used a pre-cut before to dive right in, because it is just so liberating. It really is. It's liberating when you can dive into these strips and mix and match them, because you don't have to worry. Anything that you put together that has come in a bundle like that, it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I would say is don't be too matchy-matchy. Don't stress over, does this piece go with this piece? If it's already in the bundle, it goes.
That always makes me laugh. The two classes that I've taken with you, I can't tell you the number of times I look around the room and people are still matching stuff.
I know.
And I've moved on to piecing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if it looks bad, who cares?
No, it won't, because it's already been matched. And the other thing is, how many times have you heard a teacher say, avoid directional prints, avoid, mm-hmm. you know, stripes, avoid you. No, in these kinds of quilts, the more weird your print, the more it's going to sparkle in your quilt. the ones with the really weird designs or the really geometric, big whatever.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, by itself, I don't know that I would necessarily buy this fabric. But if you cut it up into little pieces and incorporate it into your blocks, that will be the sparkle that makes your quilt just sing. And it won't look flat. It won't be boring. And that's the big revelation. It's like I love putting stripes. If there's a stripe mm-hmm. in a jelly roll, I love putting it into a Lone Star because it just makes that Lone Star just explode with excitement. And I get really excited to see that. And let the prints do the work of making your quilt sing. So don't shy away. And people will say, oh, I don't like the strip in it. Throw it in anyway. It's the one you don't think you're going to like. That's the one that's going to make people look at it. Mm-hmm. Because that's the one that's going to add the sparkle. So this has been so much fun.
I love it.
I just hope everyone will try them now.
I hope so too. I buy them all the time. I buy pre-cuts.
I do too. I'm going to take you on a tour of my pre-cut cabinet here in a minute.
I can't wait to get pictures. And they're so fun to work with.
They are.
You know, and I'm not a very experienced quilter yet. So it's nice for me because, you know, you don't have a lot of fabric when you first start
right.
out. And you're on a budget.
Right.
And it's a good way to get a variety of stuff together.
It
already
is.
Already cut.
Right, because you can just jump right in. That's the thing. When you're working with pre-cuts, you get to jump right into the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you're piecing in minutes. It doesn't take long to cut a few simple shapes, and you're into the fun. That's what I think is so great, rather than having to iron your yardage and cut your strips
yeah.
or units. So I think it's really fun.
I've enjoyed working with them, so I can't wait to get more quilts done.
I can't wait to see your rainbow.
Yeah.
I can't wait, your rainbow
I'm
star.
I'm hoping it'll be done for the March Guild meeting.
Yay!
And I still don't know how I'm going to quilt it, but I'll figure that part
okay.
out. It's small, so
just
it's
get the top
be,
done, yeah.
Yeah, I'll bring the top in.
That'll be so great.
So I'm excited.
Yeah. And you're doing a great job with our guild.
It's coming along. Yeah, it's stressful, but, you know, it's fun. You get to learn the ins and outs, and I've never participated in a quilt show before, so that's a whole new thing. I'm trying to get a quilt finished to enter for judging.
Oh, good.
So I don't know if that's going to be done, but I was going to bring it today, but I'm like, you know, I don't want to bring too much. So I'll have to bring it and show it and let you see it. On the way there, because I'm nervous to enter it for judging.
Yeah.
But
oh, no, don't be.
I'm going to do it.
That's good.
So,
that's good.
Yeah.
You'll be glad.
So, yeah, I mean, the Quilt Guild's been fun. I think it was good for me as a beginner because there are a lot of workshops and classes and
yeah.
people to help.
And encouragement from the other
yeah.
members.
So that's what I've enjoyed. And I've made a lot of friends. I
yeah.
still need to break into a sewing circle at some point. But yeah, it's been fun.
I don't know how you do it. You honestly, and I read your blog. And I've got all of your podcasts downloaded to my iPad so I can listen to it when I travel this weekend. And I've listened to some of the earlier ones. I think the last two are the ones I haven't heard yet. And I don't know how you do it. You've got the dogs and all that you do with them and their training and competitions and your quilts and the guild and this. And I don't know how you do it. I don't think you ever sleep.
I get a little stressed sometimes. My husband yells at me. He's like, you need to slow down.
Yeah.
So then I have to realize, okay, I need to cut back on some stuff. But it's really rewarding for me to, you know, I've made a lot of friends online, mm-hmm. you know, friends in Australia. I think, you know,
isn't
people
that, great?
That you would never think you'd ever be friends with and talk with them all the time.
Isn't that great?
And share information with new quilters because I think it scares me how there aren't a lot of people my age
yeah.
that are aware of this wonderful craft
yeah.
and how much fun it is and how rewarding it is. And
which you're getting the message out there.
I hope so. I hope so. Because I want a lot of people to carry this on. I don't want it to die.
To die. I don't think it will.
So,
I think it's going to go.
Yeah. It's taken on new life.
When you mentioned having friends all over, I love that too about
mm-hmm.
the blog and the website. I have heard from quilters all over the world. I've been in touch with a woman in Israel. And she wrote, she'd gotten the book somehow and wrote and I forget how she even... what she even wrote in the beginning, but we had this email dialogue back and forth, and she said that she literally lived within 4 kilometers of where the fighting was.
Oh, wow.
Along that Palestine border. I don't know much about it, but I'm thinking, she said, oh, today I can hear the bombings. And I'm thinking, here's a woman quilting in Israel that can hear the fighting from where she's quilting. That just blows my mind.
Yeah.
That I'm having this conversation with her. Or the ladies up in Norway that I teach in Prague every other year at the Prague Patchwork Meeting. And I have two ladies that have become my friends that live in Norway, way up in Norway, and they fly down to Prague, and we have the best time when we're together. It's just really neat what a small world it is. So.
And you teach on the quilting cruises, too.
Oh, I do. I love that. It's so much fun.
The last one you did was, what, last summer?
What did I do last year? I can't even think. I think it was to the Caribbean last year.
Yeah,
it was the Caribbean. And then next year I'm going to the Western Caribbean and Alaska. So,
wow, you're going to be cruising.
Yeah, twice. I know. I think this is our, I've done, this will be quilting cruise 6 and 7 coming up. But we've cruised, my husband and I love to cruise. And so I think this is our 14th cruise coming
up. Oh, wow.
So we've done a lot of them.
We're going on our third next year.
Are you? Where are you going?
So the Eastern Caribbean.
Oh, you'll love it.
So I'm excited. I'm trying to convince him to go on a quilting cruise with me.
He would love it.
He's afraid he's never going to see me. And I tell him, I'm just
That's not it at all. That's not it at all. And the spouses or the significant others, a lot of them get together and have a lot of fun too, and we all eat together. I mean, you don't have to, but it's really, really fun. It's a really good time.
Does your family like to go on the vacations while you're teaching?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you only teach at sea.
Yeah.
And so whenever the boat is a ship, is in port, there's no classes. So you don't have to pick or choose, because then you can go do everything off the ship. But when they're at sea, that's when they hold the classes.
Now, do they let you take rotary cutters on
board? Oh, you can bring whatever you want. Some people bring their own machines, but not very many. Most people just use the machines there, and they just handle it really well, the company, because they'll bring a variety of levels of machines, and so you kind of pick which one that you want, if you want the upper end or the mid-range or whatever, and they're always really nice. And so, yeah, but you bring your own sewing, like, essentials, your own cutter, if you want to bring a mat, you can, and most people bring a small mat, and a ruler, and your scissors, and or a seam ripper, and God forbid anybody should rip at sea.
I have to get backup seam rippers now, in case one stops working.
No. I know. Let's see. Do I have a few over here in my little bucket here? Oh, yeah. I think I see 4.
I couldn't live without mine all the time. So.
As you sow, so shall you reap.
That's a good saying.
Yeah.
Well, your books are available online.
Yes.
At your website and your rulers.
KimberlyEinmo.com.
And you have a nice blog that you update.
Yep,
not
we try
often
to.
Enough.
Yeah, not often enough. I know it's really hard. It's really hard
it
to
is.
Do the blog.
It is. It's time consuming.
Yeah.
And so I'll put links to all of your
Thank
stuff
you.
On my blog when I post this.
Is it? Yes.
And I'm going to take photos of your studio, so check my show notes for this post for all the photos and maybe a video of the studio if I can get my phone working.
That'll be great.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. This has been fun. I've enjoyed every minute.
It's been exciting.
Yeah,
so
thanks,
my first real interview with a quilter person. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Katie's Quilting Corner podcast. I can be reached at my blog, katiesquiltingcorner.com, on Twitter at @quiltedmagnolia, or email me, katie@katiesquiltingcorner.com. Katie is always spelled with an IE. All past episodes of my podcast are available for free download at my website. Just click the link at the top of the page.